Welcome to Agenda31.org, How to Make a Common Law ID. This is Todd McGreevy and
Corey Ibe.
Corey, let's get into the weeds real quick here on how to make a common law ID.
Yes.
The goal is to have a document that you use to identify yourself as not having a first, middle, and last name, but a given name and a family name, among other things, correct?
That's right. There's a couple of different things that, in summary, this is the identification that, you know, any mid-level business person would be familiar with, that that's how they would use prior to the Civil War and prior to all the statutory identification that has been created in the United States.
And because self-determination isn't for everybody, making a common law ID means that you've actually asked yourself the question, why am I letting the government identify who I am? Why am I not in charge of identifying myself?
Yes. Why are you using a state-issued, government-controlled birth record to identify yourself? Because all your government ID goes back to a birth record that was issued by the state. And if you were born in California, then that birth record is on file with the Department of Public Health in Sacramento. You're identifying yourself literally as government property. So making a common law ID is something that I use to replace having previously identified myself as government property via the birth record. Now I identify myself as a freeman in California.
So we're looking at identification that is self-created using any number of various tools at people's disposal, desktop publishing tools, very simple these days, everything from OpenOffice to Word to an Excel sheet, whatever you are comfortable with using. Typically you've made yours 4 inches wide, 9 inches tall. You could, you know, get two up on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, if you will. You position a picture in the upper right corner of yourself. And to the left of the picture, you put the labels, given name, and family name, correct?
That's right.
And at the very top, above that, you have a document number above that, Corey. What's the significance of that document number, and where does that come from?
Well, the document number is something that I do just in my personal dealings with government. I put a document number on every single document that I do. The name construction for the document is very simple. I put doc number CBE. Those are obviously Corey Brandon Ibe. And then the date in all numerical format. So if you were going to do, today is April 26, 2015. So the document number would be 4262015. And then if I'm dealing with something like on, for non-political ID, you could put NPID. If you're dealing with the IRS, you can put IRS. This document number makes it very easy to reference documents that you send. So that's why I do it there. It's completely optional. And when you make your own common law ID, you are going to put the things that are important to you on it.
I think
this
it's
is
smart.
Just an outline.
I think it's smart. And I chose not to put one on mine. I can't remember why, Corey. And I remember being at Best Buy trying to get a cell phone lined up, an additional one onto the account. And they needed a driver's license. And they finally just fessed up to me. They just needed an ID number off the document. That's all they were looking for. To put in a field. It really wasn't about the DL. It was about a number to triangulate. Yeah. That's all they needed. So I think that's very smart. And why can't we create our own numbers for our own system? Why do we have to be handed one from somebody else, which is at the core of the matter? So below the given name and family name, you've put your given name, Corey-Brandon, and your family name, Ibe. Below that, you have nationality. And in the past, we have both used the term American. We've since realized that we're going to update that to, say, Californian or Iowan, based on the government printing office's own, I think it's section 5.3, related to referring to the natives of the states, correct?
That's right. I think it's on page 92, but obviously on this page that we'll have for this resource page, we'll have a link to that. And you can look up your own state and find out what does the government call the native of your state. For Iowa, they call them an Iowan. That's the proper construction for it. For California, it's Californian. So I used to put American down, but now with more information, now I put Californian.
And we're so used to calling ourselves residents, and that is the that is not a native. A resident and a native are different entities in the different jurisdictions, and that gets us to the next attribute on this ID, which is domicile. We're not a resident of anywhere. as one of the people of the several states we are domiciled in. And in this case, you're domiciled in California Republic 1849. In my case, Iowa 1846. Those are the years that the state was formed as a sovereign entity and joined the Union, correct?
That's right. Yes. California joined the Union in 1850. In 1849, it adopted the Constitution that is what enabled it to enter into the Union.
That's right.
And the idea of domicile, this is where it gets very confusing for people, because we've talked about this before, the use of homographs by the federal government. And a homograph is two words that sound the same, spelled the same, but have two different meanings. And for California, literally, the term State of California is a homograph, because there are two of them and they have two different meanings, but they're spelled the same and sound the same. One State of California that we're all used to and that we all see today and that it operates the organs of government here is a federal administrative division. And that's important because it's located in Washington, D.C. The other one, the other State of California, is a government that exists really only on paper, and every government employee has guaranteed that that government that now only exists on paper because people have abandoned it, but that that government is guaranteed a Republican form of government. And so this ID puts you into a different political space, or allows you to have access to a different political space that government ID won't.
I think the key word you used is allow. It is not a magic bullet. It is not something that all of a sudden everybody and the brother is going to recognize you differently. What it does is it allows you to take the first step to defend yourself in such a manner, or to assert yourself, or to what you used the word the other day, Corey, you're not authorized to exist in the federal zone.
That's right. And that's a key thing. To get a driver's license in California, you have to certify that your presence in the United States is authorized under federal law. And if your presence in the United States is not authorized under federal law, that doesn't mean you have to leave, because you're literally not in the United States, geographically speaking, when you're filling out that application. You're in California. And prior to the 14th Amendment, which was before Washington, D.C. had its own citizens, it was very easy to determine the difference between the two different political jurisdictions, because one was purely federal government made up only of employees of the federal government. And then, of course, the government that we saw was the state government. After the 14th Amendment, there began a generations-long effort to abandon the old state government and operate everything via the new federal state governments that were created and that now have citizens of their own through the 14th Amendment.
And to illustrate this, we're just going to play a quick clip here. Let's let Obama explain it in his terms. This is regarding how guns are run into Mexico and the differences. And he very succinctly notes the difference, that there is a difference between America and the United States. Hold on.
And we also recognize that most of the guns used to commit violence here in Mexico come from the United States. I think many of you know that in America, our Constitution guarantees our individual right to bear arms. And as president, I swore an oath to uphold that right, and I always will. But at the same time, as I've said in the United States, I will continue to do everything in my power to pass common sense reforms that keep guns out of the hands of criminals and dangerous people, that can save lives.
So he very, very distinctly made a difference there when you listen to that clip.
The right thing to do.
The duality is right before our very eyes.
Absolutely. And you can further find that duality is specifically being the United States in the California Commercial Code. At 9307H, it says very plainly that the United States is located in the District of Columbia.
That is not California Republic 1849.
No, it's not. And the headquarters for the federal administrative state that operates today as the State of California is located in the United States. And it's actually physically located in a building that's called the Hall of States. There's no signs on it or anything, but it's called the Hall of States, and it's in Washington, D.C. at 444 North Capitol Way Northwest. And that establishes, by having its headquarters there, that establishes the domicile of that governmental operation. And the domicile of that governmental operation is in Washington, D.C.
And you can consent and volunteer to be in that domicile with on the federal plantation, but it's tough to get off. And the beginning of that process is establishing your own identification. And this is one way that we propose to do it. Let's keep going here with regard moving down the page here in regards to the elements. After the domicile, California Republic 1849, you have conceived. Typically, if you've ever encountered a costumed person in typically blue or black with a shiny badge and a gun, sometimes known as a police officer, they will presume that you are on the federal plantation and will immediately ask for your date of birth, which is a record and a piece of data that the government owns, part of the birth record. So, Corey, you have, I think, very astutely, in order to try and keep up with or people want to know how old you are, you know, typically when they're trying to identify you or each other, you're using the word conceived. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, well, it's not my idea. It was actually very common. I learned this from my great-grandmother, who spent the last 10 years or so living with us when I was a child, and I learned a lot from her. I didn't realize I was learning a lot from her, but we'd go out and play cards and do things as a preteen and an early teen. I enjoyed conversations with her, and she lived to be over 100 years old. And a couple of things that were a little bit quirky about her is she would never use a first, middle, last name, and she would blatantly say that those are for slaves. And needless to say, my great-grandmother was racially insensitive. I'll use it that way. And also, the term, like, when you were conceived was important. Birthdays were something that was just, you know, a matter of fun and parties, and she had no problem with birthdays. But anything, if somebody asked, you know, how old you were, she always referred to the date of her conception. And this was important because in her Bible that she had, she could show when her parents were married and then when she was conceived. And so she was conceived in wedlock, which in common law, which is the law of the land, the common laws of England, is the law of the land as abrogated by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. But those were things that I found were what people used. It was very important to show that. And there's always a reason for it. And so being a bastard was something that was, very difficult. You didn't want to be a bastard. You didn't want to be labeled as being a bastard. And you wanted proof that you were conceived in holy matrimony. And that is a juxtaposition to the state-issued birth record. If you look carefully at the state-issued birth record, you'll see that the person that identifies is a bastard. And in common law, a bastard is a lower level of citizenship, and a bastard is subject to all the laws of government, not just the laws that apply to people or things. They don't have the same freedoms as other people in the eyes of common law. So creating the common law ID, I felt it was important to put the term conceived.
Now, your great-grandmother may have been able to know when she was conceived because her parents were very astute, or whatever you want to call it, paying attention, wrote it down in the Bible when they had this, you know, magic moment. And,
yes.
My parents didn't
write down the exact date. They wrote down the month.
Okay, there we go. So yours says 10th month in the year of our Lord, 1968. Now, that's important as well. You've got year of our Lord in there.
Again,
is this supposed to flag all the Southern Poverty Law Center trained law enforcement that you're a Christian conservative and you're very dangerous?
Well, I'm sure it does. Yep, I'm sure it does. Though where I took that from is, in fact, if you look at some old court documents prior to going to all statutory system, things were dated, you know, 1902 AD, 1877 AD, Anno Domini, or in the year of our Lord. And in some documents, you would see that they even write in the year of our Lord on some of the older documents. So again, this is your ID. If you want to put in a different date or you want to put in when you were born, differently. You can. There's no hard, fast rule for it. This is just what I created for my ID, and I've used it since, 2010.
And I can share with you that I was using this ID inside a federal courthouse where I was an expert witness at a bankruptcy hearing, and the security guard was not pleased when he was trying to document my date of birth, and he was walking down, you know, writing in his notebook, and he finally got to this part of this, and he figured out what was here, that it didn't have the DOB. He was not a happy camper. His brain just could not accept that he could not get that piece of data out of me. So next, let's go below that. Height, weight, hair, eyes. Pretty yes. standard attributes for visual appearance. This is a courtesy, right? If someone's trying to actually say that, you know, you are who you claim you are, I'm going to document it on my end that you are Corey Ibe, but I want to triangulate here, and there's a picture of you. I'm looking at you. Is this what this is about?
That's it. Yeah, it's just purely to make it a little bit easier. It's not necessary. You don't have to do it. You don't even have to typewrite it. You could write it out on a piece of paper and sign it and use that as your identification. It's up to you. I decided I wanted to put weight in instead of using pounds, which I know is something just like what you mentioned there at the federal courthouse. I've had the same thing. I've gone into the what we call the ziggurat building here, which is a big giant Homeland Security and IRS military compound that's in Aliso Viejo here. And I've actually been able to gain entry to it with using just my common law ID. And by putting the weight in, I put 15 stone, 10 pounds. You know how much fun it is once they get to your conception date that they're not getting the date of birth, and now they got to figure out height and weight, and they're putting 15 ST, and they ask you, what is ST? And you just respond 15 stone. It is enjoyable to see the frustration of how this just does not fit into their statutory system.
And the benefit, though, is there a benefit? The version I'm looking at right now has 5 feet 10 inches and 205 pounds.
Oh yes, the version you're looking at is there. My actual common law ID that I have, that the version you're looking at is just a worksheet, and we'll update that. But we'll have a copy, an actual scanned copy of my common law ID, so you can see what I put there. The benefit is it just doesn't fit in their system. If they document something else, if they write a height and weight only in pounds, well now, who told him that? Where did he come up with that information? He's the one that is he's not no longer identifying you. He's using some other information that they create to identify you.
It certainly begs the question, why are we required to even provide any of this data?
Yeah, you don't have to.
You know, if you're not federal personnel and you're not on the federal plantation, this discussion we're having is just a courtesy as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we want to move on and conduct our business. So underneath that, you have your signature line. Where you yes. have your name, just like you have it above, you sign there. You also have space for two witnesses that you want to have witness that you are who you say you are on this. And then you have a section for the notary, a notary to have a notarization stamp and signature, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you have two witnesses for pretty standard reason, right?
So yeah, you have two witnesses. If the idea is you want to create this common law ID completely clean and not encumbered by any other statutory obligations. And what I mean by that is you don't want to go to a notary and show them a driver's license and use that as your ID to get your signature notarized on your common law ID. It just defeats the whole purpose because they're going to record in the notary journal, they're going to record what was the base ID for creating this common law ID. And if you use a driver's license, then literally what's happening is a federal employee is using federal ID to identify themselves as a state citizen, and that doesn't work. So what you do is you have two witnesses who will go with you to a notary, and they bring their own IDs, preferably a passport, but as far as the ID that the witnesses use, it doesn't matter.
And they're doing this in front of the notary.
They're going to accompany you to the notary. And when you get to the notary, you don't have any ID on you at all. And you want to make sure if you do have any ID that you're going to make it where you can truthfully tell the notary that it would be inconvenient for you to be able to get that ID right now. Mm-hmm. That's one of the questions they'll ask is because they want you to use your own ID, of course. But there's nothing illegal. Well, there's nothing immoral. And as long as you're not committing any fraud, you can have two other people
testify
that you're that person.
Let's be clear. You said they want you to use your ID. No. They meaning the notary.
Yes.
And the government want you to use the government's ID.
That's right. Yes.
Okay. It's hard for even us to break the matrix in our head, the nexus that's been created. All right. It's the GovCo ID that is typically asked for when the notary is signing something. But in this instance, you're saying, I'm creating my own ID. I have two witnesses here to bear witness that I am who I say I am. Will you please notarize this? And typically, that's not going to be a problem. You get the notary to sign that. The notary is not responsible for any efficacy of this document. Their notary is not authorizing you to do anything. They're just simply notarizing that these two witnesses claim that this person signed this document, correct?
That's exactly it.
Okay.
The only thing that's happening is the notary is saying that they are authenticating the signature. Nothing else in the document, just the signature.
So next step is to get the document apostilled.
That's right.
Apostilled is the next step. This is typically done through the United States Post Office, not the Postal Service, which we'll talk about briefly here, and try not to go down too many rabbit holes. And you are going to get the document apostilled, which means it's being sent to the Secretary of State, which is the GovCo Secretary of State, correct?
That's right. That's the only one I'm aware of. And you have two choices on what you can do. For what I did with California was I sent off to the Secretary of State to get what's called an apostille certificate. And we'll have a link to the California notary and apostille section. And what that what they do is they give you a choice. Are you going to use it for use inside the United States or outside the United States? And I believe California now is only you doing apostille certifications for use in the United States. So mine is done for use in the United States, and the methodology behind that is obviously police, fire, any government agencies, anybody that I would potentially be showing this ID to for use while I'm living in California, they are in the United States. And that's why I chose to use a domestic apostille for the United States with the California Secretary of State.
And the apostille is there to affirm that the notary is, in fact, a authorized notary, correct?
That's right. It's just all it says is that Cheryl Burt, who was the notary on my particular case, it just says that, yep, she was a notary, and that the signature from the notary appears valid. So what you have is you have a kind of a chain of authorizations or a chain of acknowledgments. That you have a chain of acknowledgments that the notary is acknowledging that you signed the document, and then the state is acknowledging that the notary was properly authorized to conduct that acknowledgement.
Or notarizing the notary.
Yes, that's one way to do it. Now, a common law ID can be used. I've used mine. I've gone to Mexico and then returned from Mexico and crossed the border with my common law ID as my only form of ID. Now, I didn't use the ID to get into Mexico, mainly because Mexico doesn't generally check ID when you're going across the border. But if you were going to use your common law ID to go to another country, what you would do is you would actually write to the United States, the federal government, the Secretary of State, and you would have them authenticate the notary, and you would get an authentication for use outside the United States, and you would tell them which country you would want to authenticate that for. And that document would be valid. Like, for instance, if you were going to travel in Australia and you wanted to use a common law ID, rather than another government like a passport or something, you can have your common law ID authenticated for use in Australia, because both Australia and the United States are signatories to a convention. I believe it's the Hague Convention that allows for each country to recognize the authentications of their internal organizations. For instance, in Australia, a notary is completely different than what's done here. And if Australia gets it certified for use in the United States, well, now that person can come here and that document would be recognized by our government officials.
So to get the apostille, you have to communicate with the Secretary of State in the state. I'm trying to refrain from saying your state, because it's not your state. It's the federal overlay of the state. All right. And you're doing this as for lack of a better term, a triangulation. You know, when you're typically dealing with somebody who wants to see your ID, they are themselves on the federal plantation. They are themselves in the United States. They are themselves in the administrative zone. And they want to recognize, they want to understand who you say you are. And if they are seeing third party representation from within their own federal zone that this was notarized properly, then that is a point of assurance, for lack of a better term. Right.
Yeah.
It's a courtesy. It helps make the document more official, if you will. Now that we've put this on the ether, on the interwebs, who knows? Maybe the powers be will try and change this. When I spoke to the apostille in Iowa, in Des Moines, their office at the Secretary of State, she said, I asked her, do you get a lot of requests for apostilles? She says, she was very matter of fact. Of course, yes, every day we get dozens and dozens. And these are coming in for deeds of real estate and divorce decrees and different signatures, when people are signing important documents and they're notarized, in order for them to be authenticated, they get them apostilled so that the notary isn't just committing fraud. So it's a very customary routine at the state level. So it shouldn't be looked at as some kind of extraordinary thing that you're doing, if you will. And so the other critical thing is how you communicate with the Secretary of State. I chose to send my copies. I made five of them, and I had notarized five of them because I wanted extra copies when I was going to go to the trouble. It's $5, five Federal Reserve notes to have that accomplished at the state level per apostille. I went to the United States Post Office, and I gave them 25 Federal Reserve notes, and they gave me a $25 money order. And then I put that into an envelope and addressed it very specifically to the Secretary of State in Des Moines, and did it using 3 1-cent pieces of postage, accessing the United States Post Office and its requirements for non-domestic mail. And that is another example of showcasing or proof of concept that there are multiple jurisdictions that we're dealing with here. And then I put a self-addressed stamped envelope in it as well with the instructions. It arrived about 10 days later. I got it back in the mail, and it was addressed to me without the zip code, just like I addressed it on my return. And so I received it from the GovCo. It had its own regular stamp in the upper right corner. It was the United States Postal Service.
Right.
But nonetheless, they addressed it to me, and on the apostille, my name is there without the zip code, which I thought was very kind of a bonus, if you will.
Yeah.
More evidence.
Well, it just shows the multiple jurisdictions that exist and that you have a choice. You don't have to be in the United States jurisdiction.
And so now you have, it's a two-piece document, your common law ID. It's the 4-inch by 9-inch piece of paper with your picture and all the information you chose to put on there. And behind that, you have either stapled or adjacent to it, the apostille, which is typically 8.5 by 11. And it is typically, will have like a gold embossed leaf on it. It's kind of fanciful and so forth. And we will talk about how we use these IDs, how not to use them, what they are good for, what they're not good for, in the next segment of Common Law ID. Until then, please tell all your friends to subscribe at agenda31.org to stay in touch with answering the question, what is your strategy to make a difference? Take care.